Well, I'll start with Paul's letter, second letter, actually, to Timothy, and it's chapter 4, verses 6 through 8. As for me, I am already being poured out as a libation, and the time of my departure has come. I have fought the good fight. I have finished the race. I have kept the faith. From now on, there is reserved for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, will give me on that day. And not only to me, but also to all those who long for his appearing. And in a moving sermon to his congregation, and I shared the emphasis of this sermon, Rabbi Milton Steinberg, he spoke about how he endured a life-threatening illness. And after returning home from the hospital, he resolved that he would never again take the marvels of the world for granted. Here are a few words from his sermon. I remembered how often I had been indifferent to the sunlight, how often preoccupied with petty and sometimes mean concerns, I had disregarded it. And I said to myself, how precious is the sunlight, but alas, how careless of it are human beings. How precious, how careless. I said to myself that at the very first opportunity, I would speak of this. I was not interested in being original or clever or ingenious. I wanted only to remind my listeners, as I was reminded, to spend life wisely, not to squander it. I wanted to urge myself and others to hold the world tight, to embrace life with heart and soul and mind. Life is precious, ineffably precious, and we are so careless, wantonly careless of it. And then Rabbi Steinberg completely recovered from his illness. At first, he was dazzled by the wonders of the world. That first year of new life, he took note of every single beautiful experience life afforded him. The sunlight was a miracle. The smile of children gave life meaning and value. However, as time went on, other things intervened. He had work as a rabbi to accomplish, sermons to preach, people to visit, meetings to attend, all of that day-to-day administration and paperwork. He could not sustain the same awareness of life's beauty, the intensity of recognizing the wonders of the world. Rabbi Steinberg decided that holding on was only half of the human story. There was another half he had not explored. He explained it in another sermon, to hold with open arms, by saying that holding on to life, to wonder, to wisdom, it's only half the battle. The other half of life is the constant letting go, the change, the slipping away, the loss. And Steinberg said, easing the grip on our certainties is a taxing task. Many ideas may prove uncomfortable. Prying open one's hand is a painful chore. And perhaps with some slow encouragement, the fists will gently unclench with the decision to grasp a new vision. There will still be the urge to hold on, but with the possibility of letting go with open arms. The struggle to grasp lightly, to approach life with an attitude of passionate attachment, yoked to the realization of impermanence, takes time. It must be learned. It is a balance that does not forswear the marvels of the world, but realizes beauty is not forever. Robert Frost, he wrote this poem, Nothing Gold Can Stay. Nature's first green is gold, her hardest hue to hold. Her early leaves a flower, but only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief. So dawn goes down to day, nothing gold can stay. May Sarton wrote, the trouble is old age is not interesting until you get there. it's a foreign country, it's an unknown language to the young and to the middle-aged. As one grows old, we may ask questions like, did my life make a difference? Was my time on earth spent in worthwhile ways? What did I mean to other people? What can I look back on with pride? How will I be remembered? As you know, I've been reading this book by, I said Henri Nouwen, it's Henri Nouwen. And he says in his book, Aging the Fulfillment of Life, and Kathy, we spoke about this last week. Here's another quote from the book. Indeed, we go from dust into dust. We move up to go down. We grow to die. But the first dust does not have to be the same as the second. The going down can become the moving on, and death can be made into our final gift. Aging is the turning of the wheel, the gradual fulfillment of the life cycle in which receiving matures in giving, and living makes dying worthwhile. Aging does not need to be hidden or denied, but can be understood, affirmed, and experienced as a process of growth by which the mystery of life is slowly revealed to us. Nouwen speaks of aging as the fulfillment of the life cycle, where we can grow by giving, by caring, by loving. And it appears that this can happen when the young allow elders to become their teachers, and vice versa. He restores the broken connections among the generations. And the premise of the book is that aging is never a reason to give in to despair. It's a basis for hope, not a slow decaying, but a gradual maturing, not a fate to be undergone, but a chance to embrace a new form of life. It's holding on while letting go. An old Balinese legend might help us to think more clearly about our society, the way we relate to those we have labeled the old, the elderly. Here's how it goes. It is said that once upon a time, the people of a remote village used to sacrifice and eat their old people. A day came when there was not a single old person alive and the traditions were lost. The young people in the village wanted to build a great house for the meetings of the assembly, but when they came to look at the tree trunks, how they had been cut for that purpose, no one could tell the top from the bottom. If the timber were placed the wrong way up, it would set off a series of disasters. During the discussion, a young man said that if they promised never to eat the old people anymore, he would be able to find a solution. They promised. He brought his grandfather, whom he had hidden, and the old man taught the community how to tell top from bottom. There's a story for you, Ralph. In our time, we sacrifice our elders. We expel them from the community of the living. It appears as if we have lost the traditions which have helped us to understand our living, and now we can no longer tell top from bottom. For so many of us, growing old means being discarded, sidelined, put away somewhere so that young people will not be reminded that someday they will grow old too. Claire Townsend describes old age as the last segregation. It seems appropriate in a society where being is considered less important than doing and having. Our desire to do things, to have a job, a career, to possess a house, a car, stocks and bonds, and acquire an education are marks of an ideal existence. But does the job and stuff, the degrees on the wall, certificates of accomplishment, medals, trophies, fame, fortune, signify life's meaning, life's value? I've asked this question previously. If you knew you were going to die in a day, a week, a month, how would you spend those last hours, days, or weeks, months? Consider the expression, live every day as if there were no tomorrow. In our church, we pay attention to what gives life meaning and significance, loving God, loving one another, and loving ourselves. However, we do so by following Jesus, that is, by doing, by acting, by serving, not necessarily by being. And therefore, as we age and our bodies cannot be as actively involved, how do we determine our worth? Sharon Curtin says, I have learned that a culture which equates material possessions with success and views the frantic, compulsive consumer as the perfect citizen can afford little space for the elderly since they are past competing, they are out of the game. They are tolerated but no longer taken seriously. In a society where the basic instinct is in profit, old age in general cannot be honored because real honor would undermine the system of priorities that keep a society running. So age segregation takes place in every situation in which being becomes subordinated to having. Perhaps that explains why those few powerful people who are trying to escape the destiny of age segregation can only do so by clinging desperately to their money, their property, their power and influence, thus choosing the role of oppressor instead of oppressed. Besides segregation, elders experience isolation and loss through the experience of the shrinking circle of friends and awareness that with few years left, they will not be allowed to enlarge that circle again. When I lost a close friend in 2006, my college roommate, my best man at my wedding, who shared vital experiences with me through college and beyond, soon became apparent that I was alone to remember significant life stories and adventures because others had not been there. And finally, elders experience the loss of self, which not only includes the waning of the physical and mental self, but the sense that they are no longer welcome in an active, youthful society. Robert Butler says, there can hardly be a more alienating feeling than that which believed I am who I was. The preoccupation with the past imprisons elders in anxiety, guilt, despair, depression. They become victims of a society which identifies their humanity with their productivity. Despair, loss of self in elders occurs when age groups are separated from each other. In her book, Another Country, Navigating the Emotional Terrain of Our Elders, Mary Pfeiffer says, a great deal of the societal sickness in America comes from age segregation. If 10, 14-year-olds are grouped together, they will fight with one another. They will form a Lord of the Flies culture in their competitiveness, social anxiety, their meanness. But if 10 people aged 2 to 80 are grouped together, they will fall into a natural age hierarchy that nurtures and teaches all of them. Because each person has a niche, competition subsides. Each person will have something unique to contribute. Values will deepen. Experience grows richer. For our mental and societal health, we need to reconnect all the age groups. Simply put, our elders can bring us into contact with our own aging, with the illusion of our immortality, and therefore with the precious nature of life. Life, after all, is not a piece of property to be defended, but a gift to be shared with others. and life is precious because it is not forever. All of the power games we play, pretending to be ageless and mortal, are brought low by those who have already walked the path. We need our elders to walk towards the light, and they need us too, for who can remain a teacher when there are no students willing to learn? So much can be discovered if various age groups are brought together. That's the way it was for us in New York City over the New Year holiday. I took Catherine there for her birthday. Regarding transportation arrangements, we immediately decided against New York City cabs. Too expensive. We made the decision to discover New York by way of planes, trains, and subways, no automobiles. After arriving at the airport, a young couple in their 20s changed their plans and guided us from the Newark airport to the air train, to Amtrak, to subway, dropping us off just one block from our hotel in Greenwich Village. Throughout the next week, New Yorkers of every age group were there to guide us, instruct us, correct us, support us, and create an environment of hospitality. Even after we missed our flight home, the variety of people, from a Syrian couple on the way to Dallas to a middle-aged Wall Street stockbroker to a young rabbi from Long Island to an airline pilot on his way home to visit with his family in Grand Rapids, people of all ages helped us make our plane connections in other cities, including assistance with our luggage. They all came together to nurture us on our journey. During our week-long excursion in New York City, from younger to elder, we were treated like family. So we finished our race, our voyage, our adventure together, young and old, top and bottom. Happens in church, too. Here, all age groups are encouraged to work together for the common good. No one is excluded because of age. Here in church, we can learn from one another. We can teach and be taught by those who are young, those who are old, those who are healthy, and those who are frail. Worship and in service, whether young or old, we will continue to widen the circle and be refreshed as a true family.